Welcome to episode 25 of Old Stories, New Information. I'm your host, Brent Colley. And on today's episode, I'm joined by Jake Fricker. He's my neighbor, my friend, and a local volunteer extraordinaire. So welcome, Jake, and thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
So what do you want to talk about first? I know we got Hillside, we got Sewer and Water, Land Trust. What do you want to talk about first?
Let's go with Sewer and Water.
Okay, excellent.
With that. Yeah, I've been a volunteer with them for a number of years, because remember when you were selectman, I was on when you were running the show. I started out as an associate, and now I've become chairman, just moved up, which is kind of interesting.
And you guys got like a really exciting thing going on. You guys are like trying to upgrade the whole system, right?
Yeah, we're trying to upgrade the whole system. We've been using Beardsley since, you know, the 1800s and Calkinstown at the same time, reservoir, and they've been good to us. But as the town grows and more people come in, we're looking to get, you know, alternate sources of water and be able to expand, you know, to take care of everybody that's coming in. And it's an interesting project. I mean, there's always something that you're doing. You know, you're dealing with the federal, you're dealing with the state, and sometimes they don't exactly respond on time, but that's okay. But, you know, we try to provide a good potable water for all the residents that are on our system. Our rates have been stable for years, which is, I can say, rather remarkable. And if you were like an aquarian, you would have rates increases all the time when we've been able not to do that. But we're trying to grow the system to take care of any, you know, potential growth in the town. What I found interesting about this is, the system started back, I think, 1881, and 1888, the whole thing became a reality, and we used water from Beardsley, and we were got an easement for some property up on Calkinstown, if I remember correctly, and the water came in from there. And then you moved into, you know, the Calkinstown Road area. I mean, that was just a hubbub of, you know, of activity during that time, and that's where we saw that, okay, we really have to be able to provide water and services to our people.
No, it's
and
true.
That's pretty much all I have to say about that particular item.
No, but I think, like, you guys have done a great job. And, that, you know, when I got a nice grand tour of the facility, I was really impressed with how it all operates. You know, I got to know Harry Hall and Malcolm Brown. And, you know, what was going on in town back in the day was so much different than it is now. But
yeah, Harry and Malcolm did a tremendous job of bringing the service into the 21st century. Updating the equipment, how we treat the water, incoming and outgoing, it conforms to all regulations. But there was people like them that dragged us into the 21st century, if you want to say something like that, which is good, because now you're prepared for going down the line. And our job is to take that and run with it and build on that, so that you're always constantly prepared, which is good.
No, it's great. He always makes a nice joke, which is perfect. It's like he was a part of the Brown Water Project, and he's a Brown, so it worked out well.
It's true. Yeah, you kind of had a little sense of humor there, you know?
Exactly. So what's going on at Hillside?
Hillside, I'm on the board of directors there, another volunteer agency that I got involved with. You know, when you retire, you figure that, okay, I'm not going to do anything. You're just going to retire and work for the wife. Wrong. I retire, and I'm, you know, I volunteer in three organizations. Hillside Cemetery, the historic cemetery, started in 1739. It's still active, still open, and we have a pretty good area at the far side of the cemetery that is still receiving, you know, burials on a regular basis. It's sort of an interesting way to get a history of the town. And, you know, I did a tour there, and I said, okay, we're going to learn a little bit about the town by looking at gravestones. And everybody looked at me like I was, you're out of your mind. I said, no, let's take a look at this person here. And they just read the name. Name meant nothing but died of smallpox. Oh, why did you put that there? Because you didn't want bodies to be taken out of the ground. You don't know if the pathogens are all dead or whatever, and you were trying to stop the disease. He said, oh, well, what's this name over here? Oh, Gay. Oh, Gay Street. Oh, you know, the Historical Society. And all of a sudden, you start making all these connections. And then, you know, the Bartrams have been around forever. And you have a guy like Isaac Bartram who, he was involved with everything. And he's buried down there. I mean, the real estate, iron, they did a lot with the mines. And it just, as you walk through there, you go, Jewett, oh, wait a minute. Jewett Hill, what is Jewett? Okay. There again, they were people that were involved at the beginning of the town, you know, the town's history, and how it grew on an industrial basis. And they said, okay, this is kind of interesting. Of course, you go to Mr. Weed, and Weed was one of the larger entrepreneurs around here. You know, Weed's Dam Road, named after him. There's still a remnant of a little dam there. But that was all in the Calkinstown area. Then you go, okay, Calkins, he's buried there. And then you start looking at the names of these people, and you go, oh, you got a whole history right here. In one of the Van Alstyne, who was a town historian, he's buried there. His books are great; tells you a lot of what was going on. He kept records during that period of time, so you have a complete record of who was where and the whole bit. And you got Henry Holmes; he was a slave, black, freed, and Van Alstyne and him are connected in a way which I don't have enough time to go into. but if you do a tour with us, we'll explain it to him. And, you know, he's buried there. He came up here and was quite successful. He was able to buy himself a good-sized monument. When he died, three ministers presided on his services, which I think is pretty telling. You have all kinds of people down there. And the other thing what I find is symbols on the gravestones. I asked once, what do these symbols mean? I don't know. I guess technically that's an answer, but that's not an answer I was looking for. So 2 years ago, I spent about 20-some-odd hours taking photographs of them and looking them up, and it really is sort of an interesting historical look at what is in that, you know, what's on those stones. What does it mean? What it meant way back when? What does it mean now? Because the symbols all change, or many of them change. Which is, you know, you have a, I always tell people, you know, the Harley Davidson little logo. Well, think of a wing on the other side and a face in the middle. Way back when, it was a death's head, and basically it was, you live, you die. And now they put smiley faces in there, and it means, okay, your soul's going up to heaven winged up. It's just a little, see, you can't stop me.
No, but I think what you guys, so, like, tell me a little bit about what you guys have been, like, slowly but very effectively restoring those stones. How did that all start?
Merrill Rogers was one of the people that started this, along with there two or three other ladies. I cannot remember their names right now. It was an ongoing project when I joined, and the idea was, it looks terrible. We need to take care of this place. And so there had been some people who had, you know, cleaned up, you know, the governor's mausoleum, and it looked nice. And then a few other people had cleaned this stone and that stone. And then we got together at a meeting one night, and when we were discussing amongst all the members, they said, Paul, wouldn't it be nice if we could get a committee together to go out there and clean these stones? And we said, yeah, that'd be nice, but we didn't have a clue on how to do it, but there was somebody that did. And they came in, and one of the ladies showed us exactly how it's supposed to be done, and we followed it. And we started, I'm going to say three, maybe this is 4 years ago when we actually started doing this. And you can really tell when you come in by the entrance by the, what do you call it, the chapel. When you walk in there, you're faced with a whole lot of beautifully clean stones. And we're progressing down those rows. Everybody picks a section they want to work on, and then you go to it. We're probably over 1,200, close to 1,500 stones that we've cleaned. That's a lot of stones.
No, it's totally impressive.
We use a product called D2, which is a biologic cleaner. And the brush that you use on it has to be soft enough to do the mane of your favorite horse or the hood of your Lamborghini. Anything else is not going to be used. And then you can use your scraper, old credit card. We had a lady that was taking cooking classes, and she brought those little plastic items that they use to mix the dough with. Okay. And then over the years, we've added chopsticks. So what do you want chopsticks? Interesting things that you got to get out. You know, they had to clean the letters, this, that, and the other. And we work on one. We might not get one done, and we will probably get a good portion of it done. And then we say, okay, back off. And then we, you know, go work on another one. Because you have limestone, granite, and marble, and actually a metal. And each one requires a different method of cleaning. The limestone, a lot of times you just scrape it lightly and then spray some D2 and walk away because it's so frail. And some of the marble's the same way. It's been eaten away over the years. Acid rain has done a job on it. And you can feel it when the stone begins to feel like crumbly, really sandy. Yeah. That's when you do absolutely the minimum possible and then let the D2 do its business. And it shows the care that a lot of us have put into it. And when you're done, when you stand back and you look at it, and you go, whoa. And then, you know, many of us wind up talking to the residents. They say, hey, you look pretty good for being dead for 200 years, you know? And other people have come in. When we do the walks, they notice it. And the details in some of the stones that were lost come up, especially many stones have a, you know, the born die, but then there's a lot of inscriptions underneath it. Those were lost, but now they've come back and you can read it. And the good thing is, too, that the Historical Society and us have a book that you can go in and find that stone and find that quotation. So it's sort of interesting. And you do pick up a lot of history of the town there with all the different people that were there. But the cleaning was paramount. That went along with the refurbishing of the,
chapel there.
Chapel, yeah. Well, once that was done, that really was a big impetus. Okay, if this is done, we're spending money here, let's go and, you know, take care of this. And we have a number of stones that are broken, and we hire an outside service to do that. Marty Johnson does it, Monument Restoration. It cost us about $1,000 a stone to repair it. That's a lot of money, but he's pretty good. If we contract for 20, he'll probably give us 22, 23 stones, because one, you know, I got to clean this one, but I got to do this one to get to that one. So we'll do all of them as one. But still, you know, it comes out to about $1,000 a stone. That's a lot of money. And we, you know, fundraise for it. And when people see what we've done, it's easier to, you know, get some funds. And we have an adopt a grave too. If somebody wants to adopt a grave, they can adopt it, pay a small fee. And we'll take a picture of it and clean it up and then send them a picture back saying, this is what your grave looks like now. And it's fun. And the other cool thing about this, one time about a year ago, we were walking it, and there were some problems with some of the pavements, and you know that had been we fixed that, but in one particular spot it was falling apart, and I jumped in the hole. And I said, "Oh, look at this." Found an old bottle that went back to 1930, and I said, "Oh, this is kind of cool." How do I know that? I have a way of looking up on the internet where you can look at the numbers on the bottom of the bottle, and it will tell you what year it was born, what distillery it came from, or distilleries and what was in it. In this case, it was a pint of rye. So that was kind of interesting. When I pulled it out, I said, okay, what are all these stones? It was all slag. It was the road there had a base of slag. I said, well, where did that come from? Nobody could give an answer. The closest we could come to was, you know, talking to some people who have been around for a while. I said, probably came from the Cawkinstown area where they had the blast furnaces. They brought them over and laid this down as a foundation for the road. And then, you know, filled in topsoil on top of it so you have a good solid underside. Just a little bit of history there.
No, it's true. And that's like even like down in the valley, like right down there by Veterans Field was the other one. So on either side, you had a blast furnace. And like, for instance, like Sharon Station Road, when we redid that one a couple of years back, the whole base was slag. And it's just, it's a good recycling reuse. It really, it holds up real tight, which is really
It holds up well because, you know, it's basically iron or glass or combinations of thereof. And when you smash it down, it forms a very solid base, which is, you know, it's still here all those many years ago.
And it's just like you said, like it's a tie-in to the town because everyone there, the best part about Sharon, in my opinion, is that every road is either named after a purpose or a person. And
right.
Like you live on Lambert, obviously that's Lambert Field, you know, you're at the corner of Keeler. You know, then you have places like Westwoods 1 and 2, and like you said, Weeds Dam Road, that ties to Weeds Dam, that led to his blast furnace.
You know, the other thing that I found interesting, just a side thing, is, I live on Lambert, and basically I'm a Keeler, and Keeler and Westwoods come together. And you get Westwoods 1 and Westwoods 2, and Westwoods 1 had another name of it before, and I don't remember that, but there was a little school right there on the corner, and that school, there's still the remnants of the foundation is there. In the 70s, there was actually some material there, and I know some people had, you know, poked around in there. And Westwoods 2, the first farmhouse on the right going up, their family wrote quite a history of what was going on in that area. In my father-in-law's property, there's a barn, and that barn was, we're not quite sure if it was part of that farm or if they just kind of used it, because it was, you know, his property was a lot of farmyard there too. Again, it goes back with the names of the, you know, the people that were, you know, you lived on this road, and if you're prominent, you're, oh, that's Keeler. Well, who are the Keelers? Oh, there you go.
That's what I like. I mean, Skiff Mountains, you know, the Skiffs, and like you said, like where Harry lived, across the street was, you know, where the school teacher lived, and I live right there, and that was my daughter's bus stop, so there's still old remnants of the chairs and desks. Wood's gone, but everything else is there. And then I actually found a nice fixture, like a light fixture. And the insulation was mica, which was neat. And then the chalkboard. So, you're right. The ones at the top of the hill, they're restoring that house now, which is great.
Yeah.
And if you look closely, it's easier to walk it than to drive and see it. But there's a stack of three or four stones, like nice, like rectangular kind of stones. That's where people used to pick up milk. And then the other thing that's neat about the area is you'll find root cellars. So the root cellars were basically the refrigerant of that time frame. So
yeah.
They would build it into the hill. And if you go to Skiff and, you know, walk towards Mosley, you'll run into one of those. It's fun. And you mentioned Mr. Bartram. What was probably the most mind-bending, blowing thing that I found when I got to Town Hall was that he built it. And he came from my hometown of Reading. He built Putnam Park, which is a memorial park to the three encampments there during the Revolutionary War. So when I went upstairs and was poking around my first couple weeks, I saw his name, and then I got to know Tom Bartram, and then we got to talking about the whole history. So he didn't just build blast furnace, but he built most of the buildings. And if you get the opportunity, go downstairs into the basement of Town Hall on the old side, and the stonework is incredible.
I had that opportunity once. I forget who brought me down there, and it was quite amazing how they built these old buildings. They repurposed them. You know, they were built to last. They were built very well.
And you
look at some of the old masons, how they put stuff together, and they knew what they were doing.
No, it's awesome. So we got to transition now to land trust. And I think you know what you're doing with benches, because I've used your benches on many occasions when we get to the top of the climb and I need a rest. How did you get involved with the land trust?
That was a lady that my wife played Mahjong with. And she said, well, you ought to go and play with the land trust. At which time I had no idea what a land trust was, what it did, who was, you know, yada, yada, yada. I said, well, it will get me out of the house, and I'll meet this guy, Tim, and then 7 years later, he was still out there playing. I had no intention of doing anything with him, but, you know, the lady said, you want to go to try it, and another one of her Mahjong lady said, you ought to go and, you know, take a look. You know, we're doing some restoration on a trail. And at that time, we didn't have as many trails as we have now. You know, now we have 26 and a half miles of trails with 10 preserves, which is quite a lot. And we got 50 to 60 or more volunteers that are on the list. You know, they don't come out every time, but there's somebody that you can call, which is a good base. And my first one was on White Hollow. It was on White Hollow Road. They were rebuilding a trail, and my son and myself went up there, and it was a miserably hot day, and we sweated. And when we got done, we looked at it. We go, oh, the trail that was going down the hill, sloping down the hill, is now perfectly safe to walk on. Oh. So this is what we do.
No, it's great.
It just kind of built from there.
Incredible.
I hit Hamlin with Benton Hill, and when you walked into Benton Hill at the bottom, it took Tim and I over 6 hours. Then we said, "Oh no, not 6 hours, 6 days to cut in." Through all the barberry and all the other crud that's down there. Now you have all these invasives. So I learned about invasives, how to get rid of them. You know, when's the best time to do it? How to build a, you know, trail bed? How to build benches? I think I built 27 of them. So I was told. I said, okay. And there's another one that's going to be built on the Van Aan property, the one of the newer ones. I don't know if you've walked that one.
That's one of, like, that whole Milligan stretch is like my favorite, because you get these great views of Indian Lake and Pond.
Oh, yeah. When you get to
the top, you need a break. So your bench is up there. That was like my heart rate was pretty high. So that was I was thankful for that.
Well, that's when you walked up to the top of the mountain. That's breathtaking in two ways. It's great to look at.
Exactly.
You're breathing hard. But what they're going to start doing this year or next year is going to make some switchbacks going up that, so it's a little easier to walk up instead of going straight up. They said, okay, we don't need to do that. We put a bench up there.
Back in the day, they called those thank you ma'ams because you were so thankful for that switchback and you could just rest for a spell as you walked across and then back up the curb.
But what's cool about the Van Ahn property, too, is that, you know, it does attach to a good body. So you have a 2.5 mile straight run. And you can, there's a loop there so you can come back or you can come down to, was it the Milton Road and walk back on the road, which is kind of crazy to do that, but you can do that. But we put when we were building this thing, we decided, okay, the farmer field, the first field, we'll put a bench up here, and then we'll put a bench on the upper field, and that got built, but we've never gotten around to building a bench for the bottom one. And people, I've noticed, you know, will walk up there, and they'll sit there, and they'll have a picnic up there. They might not walk the trail, but they'll sit there and look at Indian Lake, and it just, it's kind of calming. So when we built into Van Ahn, we found a lot of woods roads, trails where the cattle went, and a road that, I looked up on the Google Pro and turned on LIDAR, and I could trace, I think, from Hotchkiss all the way through. I mean, it was a big, long road. I said, this is the same type of thing I found when I was looking at Mary Moore. And I said, all right, Mary Moore, okay, here we go. Here's a woods road. Here is a old town road. And that one went right up to the, I can't name the name of the farm where they hold all the weddings in that area there.
Oh, yeah, Lion.
You know, I can't, my mind draws a blank.
Yeah, that used to go all the way down into White Hollow.
Yeah, and there, you know, there's a big old. We were digging around there, cleaning out some invasives, and we opened up the pool that's down there, and we found some egrets and some other big birds that like to live down there. And I said, so you open that up for the public, and the public comes by and walks and looks at it. Next thing you know, you start having traffic. Which is a wonderful thing, and there are all kinds of woods roads in there. Because literally, that one will go right over to White Hollow. There's a way to get to it, and I said, "Oh, this is kind of interesting." And a couple others that we've been dealing with, they were all horse trails and stuff like that. That, you know, were around forever and a year. So use the trail. Why not? You know, and make what you can do. And if you find something interesting, add it into the loop. And there's things constantly change. They just picked up two other properties on the Goodbody side. So the idea is that if you start in Goodbody, you walk up, you get hot. Maybe I'm just going to walk down here and I'll go down to Drum Road and take a swim, then come back.
Well, Jake, I could talk to you all day, but I appreciate you coming here to talk with us this morning, and it's always a great conversation with you. So thanks for being here.
Well, thank you. I'm just kind of rambling on all these different things.
It's all good information for everyone who lives here forever and everyone new coming in. So it's good knowledge.
Get out there and walk.
That's
26
right.
Miles of trail, one that has just opened up.
So as we've noted on all episodes, there's an email account that you can write to. That's stories@robinhoodradio.com. And tell us what you like and what you want to know more about, and then we'll circle back. So until next time, be well. And always do right. This will gratify some people and astonish the rest. Enjoy your week.
Old Stories, New Information with Brent Colley is produced at the studios of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.